Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weichel, the Executive Director, and I am joined today by a dear friend and colleague for many years. We've been in this work together, and she's one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. Her name is Michelle Fallon, and she is a clinical social worker with an infant and early childhood mental health specialty. And so today, Michelle, welcome. We get to talk to you about kids and parents and families and all that good stuff.
Thanks, Priscilla. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, we're going to talk today about the developmental tasks of young children and their parents. And I think that that's just a really crucial lens for us as early educators to be reminded of. As far as the work that we do, we spend all this time with children and those little ones, and we become, you know, somewhat expert in their day-to-day, the time that we spend with them. But we also forget, as we know, they're going through stages of growth and change. Sometimes we forget that their parents are also. And so our conversation today is going to be, I think, a really helpful one to the folks out there caring for kids.
Well, I love this quote by Daniel Stern, who is a child psychiatrist who did a lot of research a few decades back, really important work in infant mental health and being a parent. But he says, the infant and his parents are in the throes of the greatest and fastest human change process known, early normal development.
That really captures it.
Yeah, and I think any of us who's been a parent or a caregiver of young children knows that, gee, we finally need to sleep in through the night, we're in the groove, and everything changes.
Yeah.
Because development happens. And it's exciting, and it's humbling, and it's challenging sometimes. So I think the biggest challenge, of course, is becoming a parent in the first place. I know I was unprepared for the totality of that experience early on, something I was eagerly looking forward to. But how overwhelming the emotions were that came with it. One of my favorite recent stories is my son and daughter-in-law had their first baby, and my daughter-in-law had just finished her graduate program as a nurse practitioner. And our first visit down a few days after the baby was born, she was in the bedroom and she came out and she said, she was crying. And I said, oh, honey, what's the matter? And she said, when I was doing my practicums, these parents kept asking me really stupid questions. And now I'm asking the same questions.
Right.
That's such a, I think for most of us, that's a really common experience. We didn't know we'd worry about some of these things or feel some of this anxiety or, but again, Daniel Stern talks about the motherhood constellation, which is a group of, and he studied this in Western culture, so it's not, you know, necessarily universal, but one of the preoccupations of mothers, and now he's done work with to find many of these characteristics are similar in fathers, is a preoccupation with keeping the baby alive. And it's those moments when you go in and you peek in the crib to make sure their little back's moving up and down.
Yes.
Or no, back to sleep. Their little tummy's moving up and down. And just, you know, how frantic you can feel when the baby's not nursing or taking the bottle. And it just completely turns your world, I think, upside down in many positive ways, but also some unexpected ways. And then you have to sort of redefine your whole self. You know, I knew who I was as a working person, as a partner, as a friend, as a daughter. And now I'm a parent, and it shifts all those relationships. It shifts everything about me. So the psychological reorganization required when you become a parent can be pretty overwhelming, I think. So I think parents are are pretty vulnerable. And it's really important that we remember that.
And I'm thinking too, Michelle, as you're describing this huge emotional change and all of the pieces that come with, you have to keep this baby alive. And when you're walking out the door to childcare and you're handing that child off to these caregivers for those very first, you know, times, the understanding that we as educators in that childcare setting, we have to realize that that is so tender and frightening. Yeah. I think for, and because parents are unique human beings, they're all going to show us their emotions around that feeling in different ways when they're coming through the door.
Absolutely. And I think it can stir up so many different feelings. I mean, some parents may feel just really frightened and anxious, and that's almost, yeah, it's a biological, you know, we're wired as human beings to have these, you know, protective feelings around our children because they're dependent on us for so much longer than any other species. So it's biology in the first place, but then there might be guilt. You know, I feel so guilty leaving my baby. There might be guilt because I feel so relieved at leaving my baby, yeah, and going back to work like a grown-up.
Yeah.
There can be, you know, kind of resentment and maybe some jealousy towards the childcare provider, the educator of, you know, you get to be with my baby all day and I don't. Or what if my baby loves you more than she loves me?
Oh, golly. Yeah.
All that stuff. And it can come out as sadness, worry that seems disproportionate. And sometimes it can come out as being kind of angry or snarky. But
yes, it
comes from, I think, a really complicated place for a parent. And I don't think it might be more true for a firstborn. But that same daughter-in-law and son and daughter-in-law just had their second baby, and she's been a wreck about having to go back to work and leave the second baby in childcare. She, you know, they're getting over it, but it's big. It's just so big, and it's biology.
It is. It is biology, truly. And so when you think about, you know, those infants, just, you know, that first year, they have their developmental tasks that they're moving through. And so just highlight a few of those kind of common things for us to be thinking about. And then I'd love to have us move into what's it like for that parent during those stages of a child's life.
Sure. I think, you know, for an infant, first and foremost, I think that developmental task is to develop an attachment. In other words, participating in the interaction that helps me understand how the world works. If I cry, will somebody meet my need? Do I have the power to get my needs met? And what does that look like? What do I need to do to have that happen? If I cry, will someone come? Or if I cry, will someone be impatient? And again, this is a pattern, hundreds and hundreds of interactions over time.
Right.
And then, boy, gaining control of that little body, you know, it's like the person when you watch babies and they see their hand kind of fly in front of their eyes and there's like, where did that come from? And then pretty soon it gets more and more coordinated and they're able to actually pull the hands in front of their eyes and look at them and then eventually grasp things. And it's just fascinating to watch them, you know, gain that early control over their body. But the other big one is being able to learn to regulate those powerful feeling physical sensations as well as, you know, emotional sensations. And again, that's contingent on how it's going in that interaction, because our babies are completely dependent on adults to help them regulate their arousal. So if I wake up and I'm hungry and my diaper's wet, from my body's perspective, that might be like a 911 level of arousal.
Yeah.
And my experience of, you know, that I'm this aroused and then somebody comes and picks me up and it's like, oh, relief. And if that happens most of the time, that somebody comes in and soothes me, my brain's developing at, 1,000 synapses per second or whatever, and that my brain begins to take over some of those, some of that regulation, so that by the time, if that's my experience, enough of the time somebody responds, then pretty soon I wake up and I'm hungry, but I hear about that voice say, I'll be right there. And I can, okay, help us on the way. Help us on the way. It doesn't last real long, but over time it does. And interestingly, you know, I think I have such admiration and respect for good infant teachers, because they can't always meet that baby's need in the moment. But it's that voice across the room, I'm coming, that the baby learns very quickly. And there's even research to support that in group care, the child can stay regulated if their experience is, my needs aren't going to be met right now, but my needs will be met.
Nice. Yeah.
So I think, you know, we have a powerful influence even as educators on the child developing those skills for themselves.
Yeah. Oh, I always used to think of it as, you know, I'm the calmer of the chaos when I'm in the classroom. Mm-hmm. That even if inside me feels like, but my job for the kids in my care is to calm the chaos and to be that force of calm in those interactions. And Michelle is, I'm sure we joke on Zoom meetings when someone has a baby on the screen, because we all are just drawn to that baby. And if that baby's upset, then we're all, you want to say, give me that baby. Give me that baby.
Or in Target, I want to say, just give me that baby.
That's right. Because we just have this yearning to calm that chaos and to hold them, you know, in that cozy swaddle and that deep breathing and modeling that regulation and that calm. And I love that you shared that research about group care, and also just the great respect for quality infant care in early childhood is so essential, because you're setting that child up for what they need.
You know, thinking about being the person who calms the baby, in other words, in infant mental health talk, we would say be the regulating partner for the baby as they're learning to regulate themselves. But I think we cannot underestimate our power to be the co-regulating partner for the parent. That, you know, all the emotions that come with having a baby and then leaving that baby in someone else's care, I think, and just the stress of managing work or school and parenting, which is why why kids are in childcare. I think we often underestimate our potential to do that. And I remember once I was doing consultation in an infant room, and it's just a really wonderful setting. And this young mom was going to community college, and she came in at the end of the day to pick up her baby, and she looked exhausted, and she sort of flopped down in the rocking chair. And fortunately, it was a pretty calm time in the classroom, and the teacher said, how did that test go that you said you had? She must have sat in that rocking chair no more than 10 minutes, maybe not even that long. And the whole physical demeanor of this young mom shifted as she held the baby, and she and the teacher just talked. And the teacher was talking, you know, how are you doing? It must be hard when the baby isn't sleeping. And I know that baby and mom had a very different experience that evening than they would have if there hadn't been this lovely conversation between the teacher and the parent. And I really think every parent, without asking, is saying, what kind of a child do you think I have?
Yeah.
And what kind of a parent do you think I am?
Yeah, right.
And so how we message that in the most mundane everyday conversation has a really can have a very powerful impact. So you could say, he was fussy today. I'm wondering if there's something going on. What do you think? As opposed to, he didn't sleep all day. You know, that, and because it can be exasperating, but first of all, we're pulling the parent in as a partner. And what do you think is going on? And we're saying, poor little guy was fussy today, as opposed to he didn't nap all day, whatever. But those messages. And what do you do at home when he has days like that? Just, again, implies that the parent has expertise about their own child.
Yeah. And also opens the door for the parent to have the opportunity to share if they are struggling, to be able to. And if you've built that really open relationship of supportive partnering, not critical, you know, critiquing of their parenting style, but that open communication for them to go, you know, yeah, it has been tough at home and what used to work isn't working. And so I would love to talk to you about it, because I think so often it's just, not so often, I won't say that, but in some cases it is just the end of the day, like you said, fussy today, or really, you know, cried all day, didn't sleep. Here's your child, go fix it. Or, you know, it's on you. And when you think of just using your example of that young mom coming in after a day, test, heaviness, overwhelm, and now being handed this infant that she, it's like you flip the anxious switch on in her, because her mind is going immediately to, didn't sleep all day. Oh my gosh, that means no nap. Ooh, what's the transition going to be like? Is he going to cry in the car all the way home? I have a long drive. It's just like that whole reconnecting opportunity has been fueled by anxiety and worry about what's ahead, instead of let's think together how about today and not even focus on what's coming next.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember too seeing a really skilled infant teacher. So this was a little guy who was about to move into the toddler room. So he was walking, but the mom came to pick him up, and he wanted to be picked up in the worst way. And the mom wouldn't pick him up because she's, nope, you can walk now. You just walk. And the teacher just looked at the mom and said, I know you must be so tired at the end of the day, but he really missed you. And the mom scooped that baby up. But aww. So the teacher acknowledged the mom's need.
Yeah.
But then she was like the voice for the child. You know,
yeah.
He really missed you. This is the meaning of why he's insist. He's not being lazy. He just missed you.
Yeah.
And mom could take that in and respond beautifully.
That's so beautiful. Just the visual in my mind that I'm picturing in that. Oh, and Michelle, I think that, so these things that you're describing, they really are things that it's not necessary. It's really that deep understanding of the connection of children to their parents, and what that idea that, as you said early on in our conversation, you know, we really have this opportunity to foster and to support these essential periods of, as the quote shared, you shared, you know, the what was it? The fastest humans change process known, early normal development. I mean, it's this really big thing. And I think understanding that it's a big thing in a good way, you know, not a big thing in a, oh my gosh, we're never going to be able to achieve anything positive in this, but understanding it's a big thing in a way that reminds us as those caregivers that are outside of that family's home, whether it be a family friend and neighbor provider, or, you know, or the licensed childcare provider or whatever, are we aware of how much we can do to really support that relationship? I love thinking about it and getting it out there to our listeners in a fresh way, maybe, hopefully.
Yeah. I think it's just appreciating kind of the significance, that power that we have to really promote those healthy relationships, knowing that it's the quality of the relationship between the parent and the child that has the biggest influence on a child's developmental outcomes. And wow. how we, that parallel process of how we interact with the parent can influence how the parent interacts with the child. Yeah. And that's powerful, even though it feels hard when, you know, yeah. drop off and pick up. While they're really hectic times often, they're also very potent times in terms of the messages that parents are taking away.
Yeah, and reminding us as that early childhood educator in those moments to slow down mm-hmm. and to think, okay, yeah, I could be doing this list of things that I know have to get done, but right now I have an opportunity to connect and help this child and this parent reconnect at the right. end of a busy day. So my stuff can be set aside because this is critical right now.
Yeah, that 3-minute conversation can really make a difference.
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh my goodness, yes. So when we think about toddlers, that's a whole nother, that's a next step because they're more ambulatory. They're look out, ready or not, here they come.
That's right. So I would love to talk about toddlers. It's my favorite age.
All right. Well, Michelle, I'm thinking that we might need a part two of this conversation to talk about toddlers. Because we've had such a lovely time talking about the connection for infants, and it would be nice to be able to spend a little more time focusing on the toddler. And, you know, I think that in many cases too, the toddlerhood of a child can feel like that really busy, overwhelming time mm-hmm. because now you're not just focusing on them and you holding them, but now they're moving. And you've got right. the whole wide world out there and lots of dangers. So I would love to have you come back and join us for another episode and talk toddlers. Thank you all for joining us for this episode. And if you want to know more about children and their development and any of our resources, you can go to inclusivechildcare.org. And we have resources there. And I look forward to you joining us on another episode with Michelle Fallon. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.